The Timeless Podcast Company present this podcast. An immersive sound design.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like to welcome you to the Did I Ever Tell You the One About podcast? Did I Ever Tell You the One About Big Daddy Kane? In this episode, Kane starts talking about the series of sold out shows at the Apollo with the Juice Crew All Stars.
It was just bananas. I believe three sold out shows with MC Shan rocking with the live band. Biz Markie, he had the big gigantic nose on stage where boogers was dropping out. And then all of a sudden, Biz just fell out one of the nostrils and Cool V threw on picking boogers, you know. And I came down from the ceiling with, like, you know, royal music playing and was lowered with young ladies came out dropping rose petals. I mean, it was amazing. This was all orchestrated by Tyrone Williams, a dream, a vision that he had, and he put it together like Motown 25 in a hip-hop fashion, and it was amazing. I remember Juice Crew going overseas when we did the Juice Crew European tour, and it was just crazy. I mean, we had the time of our life rocking, and I mean, just as a tight-knit family, you know, and Mr. Magic, you know, one night, you know, getting drunk and thinking that these three buildings that he saw was Three Mile Island, and he started packing his bags and rushing me to pack my bags, talking about we getting ready to leave. You know, I mean, I understood, you know, that I couldn't really explain to him that that's Pennsylvania, you know, the state he was in. But it was funny as hell watching him pack, man. I mean, just beautiful moments. But I can't lie to you, I think my favorite Juice Crew moment of all time was recording the symphony. Because you see, when I did the song Raw, me and G-Rap went into Marley's crib and we both freestyled over the Raw beat and Marley started playing it on the air.
For you, destruction and corruption is what will occur. Much damage being done as I injure. And when I get through rocking the mic like this, you'll have to thank the God Almighty if it still exists. Like that, y'all, it's like that, y'all. And when my valleys run down, I get tapped, y'all. So Coogee Rap, my mellow, my man, get on the mic with the gangster plan. This little note is like a formula, the antidote. Forgot the cat as I quote, they want a deep throat. Lyrics that I wrote, placed upon a piece so neat. Orchestras and bands can't compete or compare, or even come near to this here.
And a lot of people started requesting it. And eventually Marley said, yo, I need y'all to do this, but I want y'all to do it on my album. Okay, cool. So when Marley was prepping for the album, I guess he told Craig G about the idea. And Marley said Craig wanted to be on the song. So I'm like, you know, hey, I got nothing but love for Craig, you know, because Craig was in the Juice Crew before me and he hadn't even really got his shine yet. So absolutely, it's time. It's time for that brother to blossom, you know? And then also I had heard Duck Alert and I saw how his lyrical ability has increased so much, you know? So I was like, yeah, absolutely, you know? So here comes the day that we're actually taking photos for the In Control album. And we're taking photos, and there's two people there I didn't really recognize.
Here is Juice Crew legend, Master Ace.
There was a photo shoot. It was a private airport out in Long Island. We showed up out there for the photo shoot, the Learjet and all of that. And that day was my first time meeting Kane. I had never met him before, but I was a fan of his because I had heard Get Into It and I heard Just Rhyming with Biz and Funky. Like, all of those records to me were like pushing the envelope in terms of what you could do lyrically. And he set the bar. He was one of the bar setters for me. So when I found out he was going to be there, I was super hyped. And he kind of kept to himself, wasn't real talkative, wasn't like super friendly or nothing like that at first. After the photo shoot, I overhear Marley talking to Craig about a session that they were about to go do. Craig tells me, yeah, Kane and G-Rap are going to go to Marley's crib right now and record this other joint. And I hear Craig kind of asking Marley, can he jump on the song? And I guess they said, cool, no problem, meet us over there. But Craig wasn't driving, I was. So I was like, yo, I'll drive you over there. But the fact of the matter is, I really just wanted to be in on this session because I wanted to see Kane in action. I wanted to just hear what he was going to spit, like what was the song going to be like. I was just excited to be there. So I was like, yo, I'll drive you. And so I was Craig's ride over to Marley's crib. He was living in Astoria, Queens at the time. And that was the day that the symphony got recorded.
I don't know what y'all going to do with this, but it got to be funky. It got to be funky if you're going to be on it. I don't care who start, I don't care what y'all do, but you got to be finished before the music is through.
To Marley's crib to record the symphony. And that's when Marley said, this is my new artist, Master Ace.
We were all in Marley's crib at the same time. If I'm not mistaken, like stuff was set up in the living room and dudes was writing in the kitchen. So they were writing their rhyme and I was just kind of chilling, just like waiting for that great moment to hear these rhymes, these new rhymes on this new song. And Marley was like, okay, everybody wrote their stuff. All right, who's going first? And they all looking at each other and pointing the finger, let Craig go, yo, let Kane go, yo, let G go.
I don't care who's first or who last, but I know that y'all just better rock this at the drop of a dime, baby.
So out of nowhere, Marley just spontaneously looks over at me. Yo, Ace, you got something for this? So I was like, yeah, I got something. He's like, all right, go in there, warm it up. These guys acting like they scared or whatever. Go in, you know, just set it off so these guys could stop acting scared. So I went in the booth with one of my memorized joints and I spit it. And he didn't really check with anybody about doing that. He kind of just spontaneously did it. But I was up to the challenge. I went in, I spit my verse.
And, you know, Ace was standing there with these big, gigantic glasses on, you know? And Marley's saying that he's putting them on the song. So me and G-Rap broke off in the corner and was like, you know, yeah, let's get the fuck up out of here, man. I ain't rocking with glasses. Nah, I'm good. I'm about to say I'm going to get some pizza and then I'm bouncing.
Now I find out years later that, you know, Kane and G-Rap were like not feeling that idea. They had never heard me rap and they wasn't really interested in having this new dude that they were calling glasses behind my back. They weren't interested in glasses, you know, being on the song.
And I don't know exactly what kept us, you know, dragging our feet or whatsoever, but Ace ended up going first.
Action is in effect and always stays in, yeah.
Glasses kind of hot, man. Glasses is hot. You know, I'm rocking with them, you know?
But then after they heard my verse, they had a change of opinion, and I guess they talked amongst each other on the way to the store about, yo, glasses is kind of high. Leave them on the joint. Let's leave them on there. And that's how I ended up on Symphony. I would have never been on that song.
And then Craig spit his verse. And then after Craig finished his verse, G-Rap did his verse. Now, here's a story I don't know if anybody really knows, but G-Rap original verse was so damn long that the 2-inch reel ran off. I don't know if people remember, but those 2-inch reels were only like, I think, 5 or 6 minutes long. But when G-Rap went, his verse was so long that it ran the tape off the reel. There was no more room for no more music, no one else to rhyme, nothing. So G had to cut his verse. So we all in there, we sitting there like, yo, won't you cut it here? Yo, nah, you should cut it there. You know, now, what about if you cut this part and cut that? And then G just, you know, like, man, fuck it, I'm just going to say something else. And I mean, I'm glad he did, because that verse that he spit, you know, on the symphony was amazing. And of course it was shorter, so now it had room so I could finally go. And you know, that's where like one of my most classic lines come from.
So put a quarter in your ass cause you played yourself.
That song just became so amazing and one of the greatest posse cuts in hip hop history to this day. And I'm just happy and honored to be a part of it and to be able to share the microphone with Kool G Rap, Master Ace, and Craig G.
I still hear beats, what's that I hear? Can I hand you the mic? I hear Big Daddy King, Master Ace, Craig G, and my main man, Cool G. Hey, they call it up. I ain't gonna give y'all no microphone no more because y'all tear it up when y'all get it. I said to do a little something to the beats go.
While we're speaking about them brothers, let me just say this. Master Ace, after recording that song, he had so many ideas. When he came in, he was like, yo, Juice Crew should be doing this. Yo, we should be doing this as a unit. We should be like, I mean, he had so many brilliant ideas. I mean, honestly, I really wish that Master Ace would have been a strong figure in the Juice Crew back in 1986, because where his mind was and what he saw for us as artists collectively, I think would have been even more amazing than what we did those few years operating as the Juice Crew. Whereas the rap side of the Juice Crew, you know? But by that time, you know, everybody else was going their own way, you know? But I mean, it was something unique that we brought into the industry that no one had really seen before. You know, that whole crew power. I would like to think that, you know, that would be something that may have inspired Wu-Tang and many others, you know, to, you know, join together as a unit, because that was something that hadn't really, really been done in hip hop before. Now, with that being said, of course, it invited drama as well, because what ended up happening was the Juice Crew BDP war, as people call it, you know, where Shan and KRS were going at each other. Apparently, you know, something that occurred with KRS and Scott LaRock and Mr. Magic. I mean, Shan could probably tell the story better than I could, but it ended up where KRS drops a song, you know, South Bronx, dissing MC Shan.
So you think that hip-hop had its start out in Queensbridge? If you pop that junk up in the Bronx, you might not live, cause you're in
South Bronx, the South Bronx.
And then MC Shan responds with Kill That Noise.
Kill that noise.
Get it, South Bronx.
Kill that noise.
Your boys and your family will be grieving your death. Weeping while they're sweeping up the pieces I left. You can come all alone and bring all your boys, but if you knew what I knew, then you'd kill that noise. That noise. That noise.
Yo, Shan, I didn't hear you say hip-hop started in the bridge in your record.
I didn't. They wanted to get on the bandwagon.
And KRS responds with, the bridge is over.
The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Hey, 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 the bridge is over, the bridge is over. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Hey, hey, hey.
And, you know, this was going on. And a lot of people was wondering, you know, about my absence. You know, yo, why you didn't, you know, step up. And, you know, in all actuality, Fly Ty, he actually did ask me to step up. Fly Ty came to me and said, yo, I need you to end this, but do it like you did it on your own. Don't tell Shan that I asked you to. You know, I told Ty I didn't want to get involved. And I explained to him why. I was like, you know, because at the time, you know, me and Shan, we had, you know, some little issues and whatnot, where he kept referring to me as the new nigga, not calling me by my name.
Master Ace.
I thought it was just me. But it wasn't just me. It was kind of all the new guys. He just wasn't that welcoming.
And me and KRS was cool. As I said, we used to hang out at Latin Quarters, you know.
Mr. C.
Kane and Chris had a very, very tight relationship. They was very tight. Chris helped Kane move out of his place at Lewis Avenue.
When I moved out of my mother's house, it was KRS-One and Miss Melody to help me move. Like, I remember it like it was yesterday. Me and KRS-One carrying this gray velvet couch down the stairs from my mom's crib that my mother let me take to my new apartment. And Miss Melody had the big 25-inch TV up under her arm, walking right behind us. And her cousin, who I was seeing at the time, had the VCR under her arm. And we took it all to the crib, set it up, bust open a six-pack of Heineken, and watched The Color Purple, you know? Yeah. But I mean, you know, me and Chris had that type of relationship.
Kane is a very loyal person. And you get to develop relationships with comrades and people that you kind of have that same type of, you know, standard with. And then they do things like that for you. You don't turn your back on them, or you don't become the Benedict Arnold and be like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get into this.
And me and Shan wasn't that cool and that solid yet. Like, you know, like that's my brother, you know, right now. You know, I love him to death, you know, but at that point in time, we wasn't that cool. So that's the reason why I didn't get involved, you know, in the beef.
But as a team player, at least what Kane did was he wrote Have a Nice Day for Shante and put the diss rhyme in there with Chris.
You may remember the voice from a few years ago when I first came out and dissed UTFO. I chilled for a while, I put down my pen, but now some suckers from the Bronx got me started again. Now I'm not out to just a whole boogie down, just a featherweight crew from that part of town. You made a little record and then you start fronting. Try to diss the Juice Crew, but ain't hurt nothing. Now KRS-One, you should go on vacation with a name sounding like a whack radio station. And as for Scott LaRock, you should be ashamed. When T. LaRock said it short, he didn't mean his name. So step back, peasants, popping all that junk, or else BDP will stand for broken down punks. Cause I'm an all-star just like Julius Irvin, and Roxanne Shanté is only good for steady serving.
And Chris, in turn, could have went back at Kane, cause Chris knew that Kane wrote it. Chris could have got back at Kane, and Chris didn't. Knowing Kane probably told Chris before the record was coming out, listen, man, this is what's getting ready to happen. You know, they wanted me to go at it, but I didn't want to go at you, but I penned something for Shawnee, whatever, whatever, boom. But at least Kane was a team player enough to put Shantae in position to get back at Chris with the Have a Nice Day record.
Cutmaster Cool V.
I was with Kane. Actually, one time we was together when he told Chris that he wrote the record for Shantae. Said, you know, I did join for Shantae, you know, to get you. He said something like, I wouldn't expect nothing less. And we was laughing.
But I mean, at this point in time, you know, that's a thing of the past. And the most important thing is that those brothers kept it hip hop. Shan and KRS-One, you know, they kept it on wax. They kept it on stage. It never became, you know, a contact sport, you know. So I commend both of them as great hip hop artists and true professional gentlemen. I can even remember back during that time, a lot of people trying to instigate and I guess hoping to see a battle between myself and Rakim.
DJ Cool V.
Even back then when people were doing the rumblings about Kane and Rakim, I never fed into it because Kane and Rakim never really had a problem with each other and they never compared the two. But if it's going to be comparisons, they both are lyrically gifted on records better than most people. When you dissect the record, Kane was more upfront. Rakim, you thought about it more after you listened to it. Okay, bang, bang, bang. But, you know, I heard people talking about it and it was always the lingers on, the people around. It wasn't never Kane talking about Rakim or Rakim talking about Kane. Never was it that.
Kane's friend, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a lot of talk about Kane and Rakim battling, but they always had like a mutual respect for one another. And I think that the media was trying to take it out of proportion. But, you know, them guys, you know, they on the same level as far as rap skills. And, you know, it's just that they talk about two different things. But they have similar personalities. So, you know, both of them guys are great guys, man. And they're true to the culture. You know, those guys are real MCs, man. You don't find guys like them anymore.
It was the type of thing where anything that came out of one of our mouths, you know, someone would feel that it was a personal shot at the other. Oh, he getting the Kane getting it Ra. Oh, Ra getting the Kane.
The legendary DJ Mr. C.
The Rakim stuff was never in my ear and never in my circumference. Nobody never really came to me and was like, you know, Kane and Ra, Kane and Ra, Kane and Ra. I never really got the brunt of that. And then me and Kane would never have those discussions because it's like, all we're doing is focusing on what we're doing. Now, when it did happen, when people were saying, who's better, Kane or Ra, and all of that. Now, you know, of course I heard it when people were saying it. My whole thing was like, I wish somebody would say, who's better, Mr. C or Eric B?
And it's funny how it all ended up, you know, and how we actually, you know, resolved everything. Because what happened was, well, first, let me explain this. Eric B was always my dude, you know. I mean, Eric B was like, you know, my dude to the point where when I first bought my first house, I was away in L.A. Doing some filming stuff. And Eric B is the person that had the keys to my house to let the moving people in to place the furniture in different places. He's telling me, yeah, put the couch there, put the wall unit there. Yeah, take that bed on upstairs, blah, 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 you know. I mean, that's the type of relationship that me and Eric B have. You know, we're cool like that. And his younger brother, Ant Live, rest in peace, was my road manager, you know? So it was like, it was never no drama like what people thought, you know? I mean, Eric was my man and Eric brother was my road manager. And the way everything ended up being resolved was an issue where Ant Live was actually present because I remember picking up this young lady one night in my car and Ant was with me. And she gave me this photo. It was a picture of her and she had written,
Dear Kane, I want to set it off and get R-A-W. Ain't no half-stepping, because I'm going to break your wrath in half.
So I hand the picture to Ant Live, and Ant Live is like, hey, yo, what you mean by break the wrath in half, sweetie? And she's like,
oh, that's Rakim's new song. He got some song out dissing Kane.
And like, you heard it? And she like,
Yeah, Eric B. played it for me in his Rolls Royce the other day.
And Ant is like, oh, word? And now me and Ant is crying laughing. We crying laughing, right? And so, oh, yeah, so what it sound like? And she's, you know, talking about what it sound, how it sound and all this here. And like me and Ant, we still crying laughing. So long story short, she is tired of me looking at Ant laughing and finally, she's like,
yo, why do you keep looking at him and laughing? You work with Eric B or something?
And Ann goes, nah, I live with Eric B. That's my fucking brother.
So, and she said, oh, well, you know how niggas talk. Now we really screaming laughing. Like, we crying laughing now, you know. But I mean, that was the point when Ant just said, yo, this is getting out of hand. This is just too much, man. Like, y'all need to talk. Y'all really need to talk. So Ant Live, you know, he called Rakim, put me on the phone with him, and we talked briefly, and you know, he asked me about
the rap soloist, you don't want none of this.
And I explained, I said, nah, I'm saying I'm the rap soloist, competition, don't want none of this. He thought I was referring to him because on his song he said,
and you know that I'm the soloist.
And, you know, and I'm like, nah, God, I rhyme by myself. I'm a soloist too. You're not the only soloist. You know, anybody rhyme alone is a soloist. So then I asked him about the
word to daddy
line, and he was like, nah, that wasn't no shot at you. Like in Long Island, we say word to daddy instead of word to mama. So, you know, we just deaded it like that. And, you know, it was cool ever since. You know what I mean? You know, it wasn't no drama. But, you know, you know, with the public, they still want it, though. I mean, there was a lot of rivalries going on back then at that time, you know. Kumo D versus LL, KRS-One, MC Shan. But I think that my favorite one was MC Light versus Antoinette. Like, that was my favorite because 10% diss, oh my goodness, that was my jam.
Hot damn, hot damn, hot damn, ho, here we go again. Suckers steal a beat when you know they can't win. You stole the beat, are you having fun now? Me and the odds gonna show you how it's done.
Like, I always thought that was the hardest track Light ever made. Only problem was, I was dating Antoinette at the time. So, like on days when I would be driving up to the Bronx, you know, to pick her up, I might be, you know, listening to 10% diss, and then when I get on her block, now I gotta take the cassette out and put it in the glove compartment and hide it inside, you know, that manual, whatever, hide inside there, and, you know, fold it over, you know, and put it in the glove compartment and hide the cassette there so she wouldn't see it. But 10% diss to me was just so, so hard, man. But, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of rivalries going on back then, you know, but that's a part of hip hop. You know, keep you on your toes, man. Keep your lyrical game up to par. So ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, I think that that's a beautiful thing in hip hop. Me personally, I love all the battle rappers of today. That time period was so great. And then like all the tours that was going out, you know, as a shorty growing up, you're seeing footage of the Fresh Fest and you're seeing what's going on with Run DMC, Houdini, Fat Boys, and you're hoping that one day you can actually be a part of something like this. And then I remember when they did the Def Jam tour, I was able to be on the last two dates. Like, my song was popping, you know, strong enough that they put me on the last two dates of the tour. And one happened to be in Nassau Coliseum, you know, in Long Island. But after that, in 88, Public Enemy did the Bring the Noise tour. And they put me on that tour. It was Public Enemy, me, EPMD, Stetsasonic. And guess who was opening up? Eazy-E. Yeah. And it was an amazing tour, man. It was one of the most amazing experiences I had ever been on, because I had never actually been on a full tour. And then, like, the level of competition, man, because, I mean, EPMD, they just had a whole nother energy. And then Public Enemy, I mean, like, you got the S1Ws doing the steps, and Flavor Flav, basically just being Flavor Flav, is a whole other mood, on, you know, by itself, you know? And Chuck and his amazing voice, and then the hits. I mean, Public Enemy just hit after hit after hit, you know. So, I mean, on stage, you know, I had to really, really be on my A game, you know, with the dance steps and the songs and the routines and the precision, because that's something that was always important to me, that precision, that preciseness. And one thing you got to keep in mind is, back then, this was not an MP3 era. This was not a CDJ era. This is straight up 12-inch. 12-inch records that skip with all that jumping around. So we have to be cautious of that, but still give a great stage show.
Mr. C.
You know, this is before DAT machines. We would do this live on the acetates, because I would have the acetate instrumentals. I remember just one particular story. We did the song on the Bug Tip. That's the song with Kane and Scoob Lover. And that's the song where we use the Wild Style beat. We used that beat. One turntable wasn't working. It was either one turntable wasn't working or I lost the second vinyl. I had to go bring the record back, spin it back on time. Kane and Scoob did that whole record with me bringing it back on one turntable, on beat, and he never knew that I did it like that until after the show was over.
We did our thing, man, and I thank Chuck D for making me a part of it, man. But it was an amazing, amazing experience. I mean, I remember plenty of nights we'd be in the hotel room, and I see other artists out with, you know, with girls in the lobby or in the hall way and stuff like that, and you know, me just being my ignorant self, you know, once I see that, I go and throw my silk robe on and my ballet slippers and every piece of jewelry I got, and then just go out in the hallway, you know, all slow, walking by everybody all slow, trying to make artists uncomfortable, you know. But I mean, you know, we, you know, it's all in fun and games, man, you know, all in fun and games. But we had a good time, though, I can't lie, man. A great time, and I thank Chuck D so much for making me a part of that.
Did I ever tell you the one about podcasts? Did I ever tell you the one about Big Daddy Kane? It's a timeless podcast production. Executive produced by Chantel Barron and MC Search for 4MC Multimedia and the Timeless Podcast Company. Co-executive produced by Eric DJ Eclipse Wynn for Pay to Win Management. Co-produced by Antonio Hardy and Saquon Johnson. Story contributors were AB Money, Chris Rock, Cliff Love, Disco Richie, courtesy of Divine Sounds, DJ Mr. C, Drip, Grandmaster Kaz, Lionel the Vid Kid Martin, Little Daddy Shane, Master Ace, Ralph McDaniels, Steve Brown, Vaughn Lee, professionally known as Cutmaster Cool V, appears courtesy of BP Entertainment, Hip Hop Hands Foundation, and DJCoolV.com. Lead sound designer, Brett Epic Mazer. Associate sound design, Patrick Garcia. Timeless podcast immersive sound design voiceover by Tembisa Mashaka, and additional voiceover by special guest Kim Osario.